Welcome to Super Nerd Podcast, the adventure that brings you the latest nerd news and rumors from movies, TV, entertainment, and sometimes science. You name it, if it is not, we're going to talk about it. It's the MCU's Echo Nerd, I'm your host, Austin, and with me, as always, is the amazing Amanda.
Hey.
Your elusive chicken.
Prevent.
Hey folks, thanks so much for joining us. Obviously, we're talking the MCU's Echo a little later, but we're also going to be talking The Mandalorian and Grogu are getting their own Star Wars movie. We've got a new trailer for the live-action Netflix Avatar The Last Airbender, and Deadpool 3 has finished filming. We're going to be talking that and a whole lot more, so make sure to hit that podcast subscribe button. We would love to nerd out with you each and every week, and if you've already hit that podcast subscribe button, you know what I'm going to say to you. Plus 10 nerd XP. We love you guys. And for everyone else, as soon as you hit that podcast subscribe button, you too can start earning some nerd XP. So we've been a little sick around here, and
we had
some technical difficulties. So we took I think a couple of weeks off.
Yep.
For the most part, we are back to feeling better. But it's like this cold has like this lingering gunk in my lung.
And yeah,
it's like, oh my word.
And then the kids picked up pink eye in all the middle of it.
I know.
Yeah, and then I almost couldn't do tonight because there is this pretty much a deadline tomorrow I was trying to make with my thesis, and I was just, no matter how hard I was trying, my discussion just was not coming together.
Oh,
my advisor,
no.
I met with her today, and she was just like, okay, if you think you can get this pulled together in 2 hours, maybe we could probably make it. And I was just like, Sharon, I guarantee I won't be able to. My brain is literally melted. Like,
yes.
I'm getting teary. I just thinking about it. Like, I was just like, so tired. My brain just cannot think. And she was like, all right, I'm sorry. Cause it was a difference between like paying tuition versus just paying $300.
So yeah.
I was, you know, trying to do that. And she was just like, I really am sorry. Like, I wish that we could have, like, it was one of those things that I was like she was super busy that she couldn't get as many revisions in as she wanted to, you know? So I was doing a lot of waiting on her, and she was just like, I'm sorry. Like, that really was all me. But, she was like, yeah, this might be for the best. So we were aiming for towards the end of February, but like, she's very confident that like, I just probably need like another week or two, and then we can get it together. Cause she's like, your discussion is very close, but not quite close kind of thing. So it was stressful. I'm tired. I'm very tired. So it was a close one.
Completely but, yeah. Understandable.
But that is not my what's nerdy with me. Just saying.
You will survive, Jekka. You will survive. So anyway.
Oh my gosh. Ugh.
So today we're just letting everybody know. Yeah, we're just letting people know where we've been the like, past couple of weeks. We haven't forgotten about you. But okay, outside of that, Amanda and Jekka, what have you done that's been nerdy lately, Jekka?
So this is still kind of thesis related, but it's just very, very big accomplishment all the same. A couple weeks ago, it was actually the weekend when Echo came out, or the week of Echo came out. I went to my first conference. It was called the Amphibian Population Task Force meeting, and I presented as well.
Oh,
so
nice.
I got to present my thesis for the first time at this conference, and it was awesome, and it was really fun,
nice.
And it was nerve-wracking too, giving my presentation, but luckily I only had like 15 minutes, so it was great.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was just really, it was a huge accomplishment. I was like, yay! And then I have another what's nerdy with me, but I'm going to save that for the main event. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Amanda, what's nerdy with you?
So, a couple Saturdays ago, my daughter did her first tech challenge competition. and she's going to state.
Congrats.
They were able to get their robot doing autonomous, and they did a phenomenal job, and I'm just so proud of her and her team.
So I think Amanda's downplaying it just a little bit, because
it sounds like she is. Going to state, that's kind of a big deal.
The way these robotics tournaments happen, it's almost like there's two tournaments. One tournament is like an individual tournament, and then the other tournament is, it's like, think of it like a tag team tournament with another.
So
with another thing.
The whole tournament the first part of the tournament is they are tag teaming, but their points are based off of what happened in their tag team.
Okay. But
and
individually,
so the final tag team is
no.
Like, they get to pick the people who won the first tag teams, like, they get to pick which team they want to tag team with.
So anyways, long story short, there's like two tournaments. One is more individual and the other one is more tag team. Allison's robot, her team, they won the kind of the tag team robotics alliance tournament. So they won it. And then when it came to the individual, they got basically in second place. And then there's a $30,000 college scholarship that they were voting on. And her team got third place in voting. And I found out that her team is actually being sponsored by Lockheed and Martin. And so anyways, there's a lot going on here. And it's like, oh my word, Allison. Allison doesn't know, she doesn't understand how cool this is. She's like, Lockheed and Martin? I've never even heard of them. It's like, well,
she just doesn't realize it.
Yeah, but like the other day she was like, Dad, is that impressive? And I'm like,
she knows who Lockheed and Martin are, but she doesn't realize how impressive it is.
Exactly.
I'm trying to think of like an example of that, because I totally know like where she's coming from. And I'm like, I feel like I've had that experience. Probably it's with sports. It's with something with sports. I know, because I'm not a sports person. And so like, I'm sure there's someone that was just like dropped a, you could drop like a football player's name and I'd be like, who?
Sure.
I'm like, okay, all right. Should I be impressed?
No,
like,
it's more of like, it's such a common company to her because she knows engineers. One of her parents of the kids, both parents work for Lockheed Martin. Like, to her, it's like a Safeway. Is she doesn't realize how like important that company is.
So, anyways, she did really good. She's like a robotics tag team champion, and she's going to the state tournament. When is that, by the way?
That's in 3 weeks.
In 3 weeks. Okay. Is it in the calendar?
Yes.
Excellent. I need everything in the calendar. Well,
what was funny is I was discussing with her coach when state is going to be, and literally while I'm discussing it with her coach, and the coach is like, I don't know the exact date. I'll have to look it up. Allison puts it in the calendar.
Oh.
So I was able to tell
hopefully
the coach.
She knows. Hopefully.
She does. It was just at the moment, she didn't know when I was speaking with her.
Yeah. Looks like our dog over here wants to play fetch or something. We're going to ignore you, Knight, because we've got a lot of nerd news to talk about. So let's get into it.
Many Bothans died to bring us this information.
Ooh. And what is the news that should be on you? Nerd Radar. Do you like how I used the dog in that segue?
That was very clever. That was very clever.
Oh, my word, dog! Do you not smell that? That's bad. He ran outside. I think there's a reason why he ran outside. Okay, anyways. Jeez almighty. The Mandalorian and Grogu are getting their own Star Wars movie. That's right. Lucasfilm has recently unveiled plans for a new Star Wars movie titled The Mandalorian and Grogu, as of right now. The film, which marks a significant development in the Star Wars saga, will be directed and produced by Jon Favreau, the creative force behind the Mandalorian series. The announcement has sparked considerable excitement. The transition of The Mandalorian and Grogu from television to film has been a topic of speculation. And now, with the confirmation of this project, the anticipation is obviously tangible. The film is set to enter production later this year, with Kathleen Kennedy and Dave Filoni joining as producers. In a statement, Jon Favreau expresses enthusiasm, saying, quote, "I have loved telling stories set in the rich world that George Lucas created. The prospect of bringing the Mandalorian and his apprentice Grogu to the big screen is extremely exciting," end quote. Echoing Favreau's sentiments, Kathleen Kennedy remarked, quote, "Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni have ushered into Star Wars two new and beloved characters, and this new story is a perfect fit for the big screen," end quote. So while specific details about the film's plot are currently under wraps, it is expected to extend the narrative of the Mandalorian and Grogu escapades. The film promises a cinematic experience worthy of the franchise. Additionally, there's speculation about the continuance of the Mandalorian series, particularly about a fourth season potentially being adapted into film format, or maybe this would be more of like the season finale to a TV series. We don't really know. All this remains unconfirmed and speculation. Even the involvement of actor Pedro Pascal, known for portraying Djarin in the series, in the movie, we don't know. That's still officially unannounced. Nonetheless, it's widely anticipated that at the very least, he will return to voice the character.
So of all of the Disney Star Wars movies that have been announced, I believe that one will be made.
I agree. There's enough of a fan, like, I mean,
there's enough momentum on that one. I don't believe any of the other announcements at this point.
Yeah.
Like, they keep announcing films that I'm like, I honestly don't believe half of, like, actually, I believe none of their film announcements right now, except for that one.
Yeah, no, I'm with you because, like, so me and my roommates, we like to have movie marathons, and we've started doing Star Wars. And we're just doing the movies. You know, I made that very clear with him. I was like, we're just going to do the movies. We won't do the TV shows. But I may be, like, filling you guys in because I am, like, up to speed with all the TV shows kind of thing. Which I was. Like, we watched Attack of the Clones, and I was totally, like, saying, okay, let me explain this for you because I didn't understand it until I watched Clone Wars. Attack of the Clones, excuse me. But, yeah, so yeah, but my housemate, where I'm going with this is, like, she loves Grogu. Mm. She's seen the first two seasons of The Mandalorian, hasn't gotten around to the third one, but she loves Grogu, and I'm like, that is what's gonna make this movie happen, because people like Grogu, and you can watch Grogu without having really, yeah, that.
Yeah, Grogu.
Sorry, that Baby Yoda. That's my brain.
Baby Yoda has his own fan base.
He does.
All I can say is thank you, Dave Filoni, for keeping Star Wars alive.
Yeah. All right, let's move on.
Exactly.
Speaking of keeping Star Wars alive, the final trailer for the final season of Star Wars: The Bad Batch has been released. Disney Plus has unveiled the trailer and poster for the much-anticipated third and concluding season of Star Wars, The Bad Batch. The trailer has sparked some excitement because there is an appearance of a beloved character we haven't seen in a while, Asajj Ventress. Yeah! This development, apparently Jack is excited, is particularly intriguing because Ventress was believed to have died in the 2015 novel Star Wars Dark Disciple, based on a storyline originally intended for an unproduced episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Asajj Ventress, known as a former Sith assassin of sorts and an apprentice to Count Dooku, undergoes a significant transformation in the novel. She forms a close bond with Jedi Knight Quillen Voss, and following her death, Quillen lays her to rest in the waters of her native planet of Dathomir, the abode of the Night Sisters. So this return raises questions about whether the mystical energies of Dathomir played a part in her resurrection, or if this is a twist and creative decision by Dave Filoni to adapt the existing canon to the current narrative's needs. Who knows? But anyways, in the upcoming season of Star Wars The Bad Batch, the story intensifies as the Batch continues, confronts new trials in their quest to reunite with Omega. The first three episodes of Star Wars The Bad Batch Season 3 are set to premiere on Wednesday, February 21st, on Disney Plus, right around the corner. Let's take a listen to this trailer and we'll talk about it afterwards. Here we go.
Hold on! We've got troopers up top. We're running out of road!
Not exactly a stealth exit, boys.
Let's move!
I thought that the end of the war would mean an end to losing more of our brothers. But I was wrong. We can't just walk away. Not with the Empire imprisoning the kid. Secure her in a cell. Omega's been waiting for us a long time. Our mission is not over yet.
There is nothing of greater importance to secure the future of this Empire. Whatever is needed to accomplish this goal, you will have it.
They are coming. For all of you.
Give us a real challenge.
Down! We're not big on following orders.
I wasn't planning on killing you, but you're making it very tempting.
I mean, when I was watching this trailer, the first thing out of my mouth was, I gotta rewatch season two. It's been a while. But, oh, I'm excited. Because I remember season two, the way it ended, I was freaking out. Thanks to grad school, I barely remember how it ended. But I remember the feeling, the cliffhanger. And many of you super nerds know, I am a sucker for a good villain. And yeah, Asajj Ventress, yeah, bring her back. I mean, if they could bring back Darth Maul, they can bring her back.
Oh, yeah.
I'm also like, too, like, hearing about this book, the Star Wars Dark Disciple, I'm like, okay, I may be investing in another Star Wars book, you know? But, yeah, no, I'm excited for this. Ugh. Gotta add that to my rewatch list so I can
I'm trying to remember what happened at the end of season two. Like,
I just remember, Omega got taken and she is at like the cloning, like the Mount, what we think is Mount Tatnus.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's from the Heir to the Empire. Yeah. Heir to the Empire trilogy.
Yeah. Cause I had read those books and then watched season two. And so like when they took them there, like her there and all that stuff, I was like, oh my gosh, I think this is where they're going. So yeah, that was the thing. Like, I don't remember exactly how she ends up there. If, like, she was just straight up taken or if she, like, negotiated and went willingly to save the Bad Batch, you know. But I just remember, like, that cliffhanger feeling that I was just like, oh, man, really? You're going to do this to me? And I was mad. But I was happy about it because I was mad. All that, those mixed feelings.
I do remember the Emperor making an appearance in the Senate and basically decommissioning the clone troopers and but I don't remember if he just decommissioned them or if he also made them like an enemy of the Empire.
I don't think he got to that point, but it's definitely he did it because I remember that even Crosshairs was starting to like he was doubting his decision.
That's right.
So it was like they were like decommissioning them, but they weren't, but it was kind of like we're like retiring them kind of thing, but the clones were weren't happy about that. So a lot of them were starting to rebel, kind of thing. So, because that was like Crosshair. I remember Crosshair's helping one or trying to help one, and he failed. And so that's what kind of made Crosshair start to doubt what he was actually, like, his decision kind of thing.
Well, it's right around the corner.
I know.
So I look forward to start watching it.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So that comes out on February 21st. Do you see what comes out on February 22nd?
I know. I'm like, man.
Coming out on February 22nd, leading into our next article, is Netflix live action Avatar: The Last Airbender TV series. The final trailer of which has been released. That's right. Netflix live action version of Avatar: The Last Airbender is just around the corner. The recent release of the show's trailer has added to that excitement, mainly focusing on the journey of Aang, the central character in the show, as he embarks on a quest to save the world. The trailer is packed with intense dialogue, impressive special effects, and even features an adorable creature offering a promising glimpse into the series. What's the name of that creature?
Momo.
Momo?
Momo. He's a lemur, a flying lemur.
So this new live action adaption is set for release on February 22nd on Netflix. So let's take a listen to this trailer and we'll talk about it afterwards.
The Fire Nation is embarked on a dark path, and the world might never recover. The world needs the Avatar. It needs you, Aang.
The Fire Nation has destroyed everything in their path. If the world is gonna have any chance, it's gonna need Aang.
Right. There goes the savior of the world.
Chase down every hint of the Avatar.
It's my destiny.
I'm not someone who can stop the Fire Nation. I don't want the responsibility.
You don't have to do this alone. You have me, Tara, and a flying ball of fur. What more do you need?
The world needs you. Remember what it is we're really fighting for. The ones we love.
I'm the Avatar, and I'm gonna save the world. With my friends.
What do you think of it?
So I am even more cautiously optimistic. I think I'm just like very optimistic at this point, mainly because of the mute. Well, so first of all, one, the bending looks like bending.
Mm-hmm.
Two, which is actually probably should be one. Sokka's actually snarky, which is he's my favorite character. So I'm like,
he should be snarky. Two.
He should be snarky. That's what I love about him. But three, like the biggest thing for me is the music is what's getting me really excited. The music is like the same quality as the music for the last four episodes of the original series. Cause that one, they got like an orchestra for it. Whereas before it was like, I think it was just synthesized. But for those final, the series finale, like they got a live orchestra. And so like the music, I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, amazing Avatar. So yeah, I'm excited. I am curious as to how Azula's gonna play into it, because she, like, you get snippets of her in the first season, but you don't.
And she's more important in this.
Yeah, like, there's definite scenes where she's going to be in it. So I'm kind of curious how they're bringing her in earlier, it seems like. Because I get the vibe, I can't tell if they're, I see a lot of season one in it, but with the snippets of Azula, and there's even some scenes with Iroh and Zuko that I'm just like, that's season two stuff. So I'm like, we'll see how they play it. But it seems like they're kind of span, like, they got both seasons going.
So, important question. Yeah. Have you seen the live action One Piece?
I have not.
Okay. You should watch it. I absolutely love it. It is fantastic. And I'm really, really getting, like, One Piece vibes. Like, honestly, it's not top quality cinematics that I'm noticing. Like, it's more of like the One Piece cinematics.
I don't know. This looks freaking amazing. I'm just gonna say it.
I said the bending actually looks like bending.
This looks like the money where
it was most important.
That's
what's important there.
Yeah.
And I love live action One Piece, and many, many people love.
All right, we're not talking about One Piece. We're talking about Avatar. Avatar, oh. Amanda, Avatar. Continue.
I just realized, I think.
Continue before I sleep on the couch.
Hold on. I hope my headphones won't die on me. I think they're dying.
The filmography, the how they did sets, it felt lower budget a little bit, kind of like One Piece, but what was more important was the story and like how they do certain things, and I think they're going to nail the important parts of the story, if that makes sense.
That's
what gives me hope for it.
Yeah, it's really funny because I have a friend who she was so upset with the movie that she actually like wrote her own script for the movie for book one, and it was really and like she invited friends over and we did a read along because I read Zuko. It was really fun. And it was one of those things that like I really liked what she did, because like she went through and pulled out the key points that would feed into seasons two and three, and it was really fun. And yeah, it was just one of those things that's like, you know, like I'm not like I don't my expectations for this is not to be an exact replica of the originals, but I want it to be a much better live action than what had happened previously. Like, yeah. So that's where I'm excited. I'm like, okay, this seems like a good live action adaptation. Like, I am expecting an adaptation, you know. I don't expect exact replicate kind of thing. Because the original was like 22 episodes. So, like, first season was 22 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm wondering, do you think they'll condense down all of season one in the cartoon to season one of the live action? Or do you think we're going to be getting more episodes? Are we just going to get what are we getting?
I think we're going to get a condensed one. I think, because even though some of my favorite episodes are kind of like... some of my favorite episodes are filler episodes,
mm-hmm.
but I will say this, if it does well and Netflix is like, okay, like, and it doesn't cover as much of season two, because I didn't see Toph in there at all. Sorry, I'm rambling. Pretty much, if they go ahead and do a season two, the biggest mistake Netflix can possibly make is not do the episode with Secret Tunnel. If they leave out Secret Tunnel, they're doomed. Just saying, that is like the best episode of all time. That's the Cave of Two Lovers. Just to clarify that.
Funny.
It's like the best one. So.
All right, well, let's move on. Deadpool 3 has officially finished filming. So filming for Deadpool 3 has recently concluded, with stars Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman expressing their emotions through heartfelt messages as they wrapped up production. Ryan Reynolds expressed his gratitude on X/Twitter. His post, which humorously included a crotch shot of him in his Deadpool costume, acknowledged the challenges faced during production, including the delays due to the SAG writer's strike.
AFTRA.
Yes. The actors and writer's strike. This resulted in the movie's release being pushed from May 3rd to July 26th. Reynolds Post read, quote, "The suit hides the blood, also the sweat, but today, with Deadpool rapping, it's almost tears. A giant and forever thanks to the cast and crew of our film who battled wind, rain, strikes, and at real Hugh Jackman, all under the stalwart leadership of at Sean Levy Direct. I got to make a movie with my closest pals, and that doesn't happen very often. See ya, July 26th.
I'm just going to correct one thing because it's an important detail. He said mostly tears, not almost tears.
Mostly tears. Okay.
It,
Hugh Jackman also took to social media to acknowledge the cast and crew along with Reynolds and director Sean Levy. As he completed his final scenes for the film, he shared his experience and expressed his excitement in a post saying, "What a ride. I've loved every minute of making this movie. Well, not the training and diet, but the other 93.2%. To the best crew and cast, thank you. You are all aces. To my two best mates at this Van
Ryan
City,
Reynolds and Sean Levy, the director.
Well, you're impatient today, Amanda. What is going on? Let me get through the article.
Talk about Echo.
I literally couldn't have done this without you. Literally, just July 26 can't come soon enough. Time to shave. Alongside this message, he posted three photos, one of which included highlighted his departure from Wolverine's iconic facial hair. Deadpool 3 is set to be the sole MCU release in 2024. Can you believe that? That's crazy. While an official synopsis remains undisclosed, the film is expected to offer a few raw, audacious, very much R-rated experiences when it premieres July 26th.
I'm so excited for Deadpool 3. So very excited. I actually spent time looking for the Once Upon a Deadpool so I could watch it with my kids. And it is very difficult to find.
I think it's on Disney Plus now.
It's not. They used the picture for Once Upon a Deadpool for Deadpool 2.
Oh, I hope you caught that in time.
Oh, I did. I did. I looked. My kids are like, "Once Upon a Deadpool, Mom, can we watch this?" And I'm like, "Oh, I didn't think that seems straight." So I go and look at it. I'm like, "It's Deadpool 2 straight up. What were they thinking using that picture?"
Yeah.
But
it's
I have
not knowing what they're doing. That's what it is.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Like, I'm still floored that they would use that picture.
Well, it's probably a good thing when all the cast and crew are like, "Hey, I got to work with all my buddies." Like, I got a feeling that we're gonna get a great movie.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. New Ghostbusters Frozen Empire details talks Dan Aykroyd's basement buddy. So exciting new information has been released about the eagerly awaited Ghostbusters Frozen Empire movie, shedding light on the roles of Dan Aykroyd's Ray Stantz. Logan Kim's podcast and McKenna Grace Phoebe Spangler. So in this installment, Ray Stantz and podcast form a dynamic duo. Dan Aykroyd shared insights about this pairing in an Empire interview, saying, "Ray and podcast are buddies. Ray's a mentor to him. He's renting Ray's basement to shoot an Instagram series called Repossessed, where people bring in objects they think are haunted. The interaction between Ray and podcast promises to deliver engaging scenes. Meanwhile, Phoebe Spangler, portrayed by McKenna Grace, is thriving in her ghost-busting endeavors. Grace describes her character's journey. Phoebe's in her element. Phoebe's in her element. She's now ghost busting. Why don't you do that earlier?
Because I was going to be nice until you said it again.
And I was sitting here like, that's actually how I pronounce it when I read it. So I didn't even notice.
Yeah, thanks. Phoebe's in her element. She's now ghost busting on a totally different scale to what she was doing in Oklahoma. The narrative arc of Phoebe or Phoebe, one of the two, involves deep immersion in the realms of science and ghost hunting. In the story setting, New York City is gripped by a mysterious and sudden freeze triggered by an ancient artifact that awakens a malevolent force. The crisis leads to the Spangler family back in the iconic New York City firehouse, joining forces with the original Ghostbusters. Here, they've established a highly confidential research lab, elevating ghostbusting to advanced levels. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, slated for release March 22nd. Woohoo! Woo. What do you think, Amanda?
I'm really excited for it. I'm excited to watch it with my kids and have a movie I can take them to the theater to that we're all excited to go to.
Yeah.
There's been very few things that my entire family are excited for, and this is one of them. And so it's worth going to the theaters because it's the excitement of going together to do that. So I'm really happy that we can do that. Okay. So when is it coming out again? I'm sorry.
It's like right around the corner, March 22nd.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm already thinking like 2 months ahead. I'm like, holy cow.
Well, yeah, we've got, I just put Ghostbusters Afterlife Rewind in our to-dos.
Oh, that's what you're doing. I was like, yeah. You're doing a lot.
It's because everything comes out that week, yeah, right after that.
Yeah,
that's true. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'm looking forward to this. Like, I love Ghostbusters Afterlife. Don't get me wrong. A proper Ghostbusters sequel. But now that we're back in New York City, this is going to feel like a real, real Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Movie. Like the other one felt like nostalgic, but this one, I think, yeah.
So remember I said that we're dealing with an illness? I think one of our kiddos just came down and be like, Mom, feel my head.
Oh no.
I know. Get some medicine. Go to bed, sweetie. All right, let's move on. Let's move on because this blew my mind when I saw this. Jurassic Park, Jurassic World is getting a complete reboot. Universal Pictures is in the process of creating a new addition to the Jurassic World series, bringing in David Koepp, the original Jurassic Park screenwriter, for the task. As reported by Deadline, this new project is being labeled as a, quote, complete reboot, end quote, and is rapidly progressing towards production. In a significant shift from previous films, the upcoming Jurassic World movie will present a novel perspective on the Jurassic era. Notably, stars Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard are not expected to reprise their roles, and there are no plans for reappearances by Jeff Goldblum, Lara Dern, or Sam Neill either, which makes sense if this is a complete reboot. Steven Spielberg, through Amblin Entertainment, will take on the role of executive producer for the new venture, with Frank Marshall and Patrick Crowley set to produce. Jurassic Park and Jurassic World franchises have consistently been major revenue generators for Universal Pictures, and the studio is evidently eager to capitalize on the success once more. While the franchise has enjoyed a successful history, some may question the necessity of another installment, especially if it's rebooting the franchise. The hope is that the creators will venture into uncharted territory with the storyline, offering something distinct and different from the previous films. As the studio embarks on this reboot, it raises the question, just exactly what will audiences see in this franchise? I don't know. What do you make of this, Jekka?
I'm just kind of like, what? Why? I'm very confused why they would feel like they need to do this. And that whole thing about taking it in a new direction, I'm like, okay, does that mean they're going to do... Because... Are they going to try to like make it like adapt it more or like align it more with the book? Because John Hammond's a jerk and greedy monster in the book and he dies. Spoiler alert. Sorry. And so I'm just like, okay, are you going to like align it more with the book in that regard? Or like, I don't know. But yeah, it's like, and even then it's like, okay, but if you're not going to, because the first Jurassic Park movie did a very good job of adapting from the book, So if you're not going to do that, then what? Are you going to make sure like all the dinosaurs are actually from the Jurassic area? Kind of, yeah. Sorry.
I
don't understand unless you totally intend to throw out the whole storyline and just keep the title Jurassic Park, you know, and something with dinosaurs.
I am very cautious, not quite mad, maybe a couple steps above that. I don't like the idea of a rebooting Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Jurassic Park had their hits, Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, all those movies, they had some hits and misses, but overall, the franchise is fantastic. And I'd rather them do another movie set in the current franchise timeline than just,
toss it out the window and do something new.
Yeah. Maybe make a reboot, or not a reboot, a prequel movie to one of the other movies.
Fill in
some gaps. I mean, show Jurassic World being built.
Yeah, you know? And like the problems that came with that. And I would say too, like you could even still, because you know, Jurassic Park 3 took elements from the book that didn't make it to the movie and they put it in there. Yeah. And there's like between Jurassic Park and The Lost World, between those two books, there's a lot of good content that you can like easily make another movie out of.
Yeah.
But it would only work in the sense of like making it like tying it into Jurassic World, or like if you know something like between Jurassic Park 3 and Jurassic World. I don't know. But yeah, it was like, because Jurassic World, I remember when that came out, I was a little skeptical of it, but I appreciated that they were kind of like, oh, this is if it actually worked, you know. Like the idea behind Jurassic Park actually worked, and that's what made it work. You know, that's what made it so good. But if they do go with this, I just don't. My biggest complaint with the Jurassic World movies is they were starting to do more monsters than dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was just like, if you're gonna have a movie about dinosaurs, make it a movie about dinosaurs. Like, don't do this. Like, we're gonna throw a bunch of genes together and see what happens. It's like, stop that. Like. That's a monster movie at that point. I'll watch King Kong and Godzilla instead.
Yeah, the films did move more. They did move away from dinosaur to Frankenstein.
Yeah. There we go. That's the way. It became more Frankenstein. Yeah. And it's like, I want dinosaurs, you know. That's why Jurassic Park, the first one, is like stands the test of time. Is still amazing.
You know, I got to be honest with you. I don't know. I don't know what the box office would look like. And if it would attract the same type of crowds, but I wouldn't mind, honestly, a Jurassic Park movie in which everything works perfectly, and we just get to experience
a novel idea,
and we just get to experience the joy of going to Jurassic Park and seeing kids' imaginations and minds blown by the awesomeness that is dinosaurs. And
see, the T-Rex eat the goat and not the car.
Yeah, like you know, if they want to reboot in that direction, yeah, maybe, you know, because who doesn't want to go to a real Jurassic Park? I want to go to a Jurassic Park.
I do, too.
Let's have a movie where everything works perfectly. You're waiting in lines. You're getting the way overpriced, yeah. I don't know, hot dog and the t-shirt at the
$10 churros.
I know. Let's have everything work perfectly. Like that would be awesome.
The problem is having worked in retail, nothing ever works perfectly. And when you add giant monsters to it.
Quiet,
that would be the conflict. It's the customer service. I can't
get climbed into the T-Rex cage.
No. Someone drops their phone in the Velociraptor pen and the Velociraptors eat it. And now they're trying to like sue. And so customer service is like, it's your act.
No,
oh my gosh,
they're trying to give the Velociraptor Epicac. Ugh. To make it vomit up the phone.
There you go.
All right, we're going to move on. We're going to move on. Tron 3 is adding X-Files Gillian Anderson. Sorry, Gillian Anderson has been cast in Tron Ares, the upcoming third installment of Disney's revived science fiction series. Deadline reports that Anderson, acclaimed for her role in The X-Files, The Crown, has secured a role in the third Tron movie. Her character details remain undisclosed, but she joins a cast that includes Jared Leto, who plays Ares, described as a fictional character who crosses over the over from the world of video games to planet Earth in a story centered around artificial intelligence. The script for this AI-driven narrative is penned by Jesse Wigato and Jack Thorne. The film's ensemble features many different actors, none of them, I mean, I'm going to attempt to pronounce their names. Yeah, I won't. I'm not on a good streak today. Initially conceived as a sequel to Tron Legacy from 2010, Tron Ares was shelved in 2015 following the commercial disappointment of Tomorrowland. The project was resurrected in 2017, this time as a reboot rather than a direct sequel. Garth Davis was first attached to direct, but Joachim...
just don't.
Yes, yes. This is a... This is like a it's Swedish word.
It's got special
word.
Letters in it.
by J.R. J is the first name, R is the last name. Despite the project finally gaining momentum, Tron Ares encountered significant delay due to the actors and writers' strikes. But the film is back on track with a theatrical release of 2025.
My huge disappointment is they're not doing a direct sequel. Loved Tron Legacy. I was so excited for a sequel and so disappointed when they didn't do it. I loved the Tron animation series. What were they calling it?
I don't know.
I remember you talking about that, and I was originally gonna need to add that to my list to watch.
So I really hope that they at least do make it related to Tron Legacy, because it had so much potential and there's no reason not to have done it. And that what makes me so mad is Tomorrowland wasn't even related to Tron.
Think I saw Tomorrowland.
Tomorrowland, it had George Clooney in it. It looked decent, but not enough to go out of the theater.
I'm pulling up IMDb check because I need it to jog my memory, because right now I keep thinking of Tomorrowland at Disneyland kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
It looked fun, but bland. And so didn't bother. But
I remember seeing that. Okay, yeah, that was meh.
Yeah.
It was okay. It was fine.
But they really should have done the direct sequel. I think that would have been amazing. So I'm really hoping that Tron Ares does well, and maybe I can get all my kids to watch the original Tron and then see Tron Legacy. And I'm so excited for that.
No, well, I'm with you on that. I'm sad when they, nothing disappoints me more than hearing reboot. A reboot, because reboot's different than a remake. A remake's we're going to redo this with different actors, but it's going to be the same storyline, maybe tweaked a little bit. But a reboot is throw it all out the window and start from scratch. And I'm just in some cases, yes. In other cases, why get rid of a wonderful cake you've just made that's absolutely delicious and we want seconds? Why are you getting rid of it,
Exactly.
I'm hungry right now, if you haven't noticed.
All right, well, that must mean we better move this podcast along and talk some MCU Echo.
We had our honeymoon on Alderaan.
Good thing we took pictures, huh?
Shut up, Wesley.
You have no idea what you're dealing with.
Shakespeare in the Park?
And that bell means it is time for our main event, the MCU Echo Nerd Out!
see everything that you are. You and I are the same. I taught you everything. Don't be afraid.
I was there for you!
How could you betray me like this? Still a chance for you to get out of this alive. You want a war, you'll have it.
You take away my legacy, I take away yours!
And only then, I will give you the sweet relief of death.
What did you do?
Marvel Studios Echo. All episodes streaming tonight. Set your Disney Plus profile to TVMA to stream.
Well, not tonight. It's been on for a little while. Hey, special shout out to all you super nerds who have hit that podcast subscribe button. We really, really appreciate you. Please help us get the word out. Tell a friend about the podcast. And I want to invite you to hit that podcast subscribe button if you've not done so already. Come on, do it. You'll get plus 10 nerd XP.
Nerd XP.
All right, Jekka, what'd you think of Echo?
So this is where I get to say my other nerdy with me.
Okay.
I really liked it to the point that I finally got around to watching Daredevil, and I finished the first season of Daredevil.
Oh!
The original, like, Netflix one. Yeah. Because, like, I think part of... I had my thoughts organized, like, 2 weeks ago. And now they're out the window. Anyways, so if I don't make sense, I apologize. But the thing I liked most about Echo was that she didn't have superpowers, really. Not like the other MCU heroes, you know? And I liked that. In a way, like, her superpowers were kind of more like drawing power and memory from your ancestors, and I just loved that. Like, I loved... So this is jumping into spoiler territory. Sorry, everyone. But I just loved how... Like, that was her power, was just, like, her direct link to Chaffa, the first Choctaw, you know? Like, I just loved that, like, she was a direct descendant of that, and that gave her power. And that power was, like, not only to, like, it was not just to fight, but to protect and heal. And I liked that about it. I thought that was just really cool. So I like it sucked me in, and I was thinking, yeah, because like Moon Knight is like kind of superhero kind of thing, but I just really enjoyed Moon Knight. It was just like a refresher because it wasn't part of some big Avengers Endgame kind of thing. Like it was like its own thing. And that's what I really liked about Echo, was just that it was its own thing. I just was so beautifully done. And yeah, and then just like
so what was it about Echo that motivated you to go back and watch the first season of Daredevil?
Well, not go back and watch, but watch it for the first time, because I just never got around it.
Yeah.
It was Kingpin.
Oh yeah.
So you know, he came up in the Hawkeye TV show, and I was like, oh yeah, he's pretty cool. Like, and then you get him in the Miles Morales Spider-Man movies, and I was like, yeah, he's a force to be reckoned with. But this one, him, like, Vincent D'Onofrio. D'Onofrio. Man, I'm as bad as Austin today, everyone. seeing him play Kingpin throughout episodes instead of just like two scenes like in Hawkeye, I was just like, holy cow. This guy is awesome. You know, he's an awesome villain. I was like, this guy is force to be reckoned with. This is crazy. And I remember everyone saying that, like, he's the main villain, the main antagonist in Daredevil. So I was like, okay. And it, especially, like, you know, this tying, bringing Daredevil into the MCU canon and all that. I was like, okay, I want to watch Daredevil now. And I will say this, like, there's a part of me that wishes I had seen Daredevil before watching this, so I could, like, really, truly appreciate Kingpin. But at the same time, I'm glad I hadn't, because I was just as surprised as Maya to find out that Kingpin killed his own father. I thought, and I got the vibe that she was thinking the same thing, that like his father died, kind of like how her father died, like a result of violence. He got killed because of like someone else killed him. And that's why Kingpin's doing what he's doing. Like he's trying to take over, become the top crime boss so that he can control and stop that from happening. Like I thought that's like every time he said like my father died when I was 12 and like she, you know, I was just like, oh man, like, you know, it must have been like, that's a terrible, you know, great origin story. But it was like, wait, yeah. He killed his own father? And I was like, well, because Maya was surprised by that too, you know, and that was like a linchpin for her as well. And I was like, so I kind of like, I'm glad I didn't know that beforehand. But at the same time, I'm like, now that I've finished season one of Daredevil and got to see Vincent D'Onofrio's glorious performance as Wilson Fisk, I'm just like, okay, Echo's definitely going to be a very soon, like, I'm going to go back and rewatch that very soon because, like, that was just so amazing. Like, yeah.
So I'll say this. Vincent D'Onofrio, he owns Kingpin.
Yeah, by a lot. 100%.
He took that role and made it his. He really did. And for me, I came into Echo going, the only person who matters is Kingpin in this story. And I had zero interest whatsoever in Echo. Like, I really didn't care.
You're talking about the TV series Echo or the character?
The character. Maya. Maya, yeah. Okay.
Dog, are you kidding me? Oh, my word. That's bad. I got the plate going on the pan. Dog, what is your problem?
He needs more fiber.
What is your problem? Oh, my word. Here, you keep talking. I'm gonna go get the Febreze.
It's times like this where I'm so grateful I have a bearded dragon that doesn't do that.
So I think going in without knowing any really big thing about Kingpin, I think helped you actually be able to enjoy Echo, because for me, I just never felt I could connect. Like, she didn't interest me at all. I only watched it because Kingpin was in it, and I wanted to see it. Her interactions with Kingpin, I'm like, this is so tame. Where's my Kingpin?
I will say, Echo was not as violent and bloody as I was expecting. And that was even before I watched Daredevil. Like, I was expecting it to be a bit more violent. And even now, like, watching Daredevil, I was like, yeah, they did some things in Daredevil that I was expecting in Echo.
Yeah.
So I was thinking back on it now, I was like, yeah, I feel like that was definitely the Disney umbrella coming out. Because, like, I felt like it was great. I felt like it was good, but it definitely, there was more potential in what could have happened.
Yeah.
There's more so what ifs kind of thing.
I think because you came from that perspective, I think that makes it fantastic for you. And I loved hearing you talk about it because I'm like, oh, those are like really cool things. Yeah, now that I think about it. But I was so distracted because I wasn't interested.
You were like, I want Kingpin. When's Kingpin? Ah, there's Kingpin. Yes. Yay. Oh, okay. He's gone now.
He's being so tame with her. Like, where's like the Kingpin-ness?
Well,
like,
no, he had that.
He did, but he was like, trying to reason with her, and I was like, just get her.
Well, okay, so I liked the series a lot in the beginning. I liked it in the beginning, mostly because Kingpin was in it, I'll be honest. I did enjoy the middle episodes, and then I have mixed feelings about the last episode. Like, there's elements of the last episode I really liked, even more than the first episode, and then there's elements of the episode I didn't like at all. What I didn't like about that, actually, what I liked about the last episode was I really enjoyed Kingpin being a villain in an interesting way. Like he put Maya in a position where she realized, as much as she wanted to kill him, if she killed him, she would actually be walking down the exact same path that Kingpin did himself. Yeah.
I really like that too.
So killing him, doing the very thing she wanted to do, would actually make her closer to being him. And so she had to overcome that and ignore, basically overcome the urge to kill him and just say, okay, well, I'm good. Being the better person now means not killing him. So I love that whole angle, and I love the personal conflict that the villain put the hero through. We don't see that in Marvel. We don't see that in DC. We don't see that in superhero movies these days.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that, and that's what I loved about the last episode. Now, what I hated about the last episode is... And it lends completely to the Marvel burnout we've been feeling is you talked about her not having superpowers. She didn't have superpowers until the very end, and I, as soon as they brought in the superpowers with like the weird hand things, and then like you can pass those superpowers on to all the women and ancestors in the room, like, I got to be honest with you. It felt like they cheated the story in that moment. It felt like a gimmick. And that's not a good thing for a superhero franchise, that as soon as the heroes start using superhero powers, it feels like a cop out.
Oh, and I didn't see it that way, but I think I was looking at it from the perspective of like a lot of indigenous beliefs, because I've been reading a lot of keep going. I didn't see that, but yeah.
I understand what you're saying about indigenous beliefs and getting your power from ancestors as opposed to like a radioactive meteorite hitting the earth. But when all things are said and done, it's still gaining some superpowers. It's just a different approach to what those superpowers, how those superpowers are achieved. I need more of the villain putting the bad guy through personal challenges, personal growth, and I need less just go in and beat people up. Now, having said all of that, the scene in which Daredevil shows up to beat everybody up was perfectly okay with me. Daredevil is awesome. And so having Daredevil,
I agree with that now.
having Charlie Cox play Matt Murdock, play Daredevil, he does such a great job. He's the perfect Daredevil to Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin. And I cannot wait until we finally get, what was it, Daredevil Reborn? Is that what they're calling it? I can't wait for that. And all the rumors are saying that Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin is basically turning into the MCU's Thanos for the street level superheroes,
which he should be.
Yeah.
And he should be getting into Spider-Man too, because he's a main villain in Spider-Man,
and he's
everyone's villain on a street level.
And here's the thing, I got to be honest with you. I am way more interested in the MCU's street level villain Kingpin than I am in the MCU's big level Kang the Conqueror or whatever direction they're going to go in.
Yeah, no, like I feel, I mean, like I said, I'm watching Daredevil right now. Yeah. Like after and this, I'm going to go start season two. Like I'm super stoked. So yeah, I think it's just because like the street level Marvel, like what is going on?
I don't know. Our kid and dog are like running over things. The dog's been like extra annoying tonight for whatever reason.
Because he didn't get Locke.
Oh, I didn't get it. Okay, all right. Anyways, what were you saying, Jacob?
Yeah, no, like, I'm definitely, like, more intrigued with the street-level stuff, like Kingpin. You know, I'm a sucker for a good villain, and Kingpin is just a downright... Like, that's the thing. I don't want to take this away from Echo, but I will be bringing in Daredevil a lot. Because I, like, that's what I really enjoyed about Daredevil, is I was like, ah, finally, like, here's a Marvel TV show, a Marvel storyline, that's along the lines of Batman. It has all the elements of Batman that I enjoy. Kind of the psychological side of things, yeah. You know, like, where the character has to, like, really figure out, like, the hero has to decide how far they're willing to go to stop this person, you know? And that's what I like about Batman, is, like, Batman's villains push him consistently to that line to see if he'll go over, aka Joker, you know, Tatooine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I really like Daredevil because... Kingpin does that, and I liked what you pointed out, like Kingpin, him putting Maya in a position where she had to decide, like, oh, if I kill you, will that be good? Not just like, you know, because the answer is like, yes, kill Kingpin, that'll be good for everyone, but it's like, will that be good for me, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, and I agree, like it's like Marvel, I feel like, having been under Disney umbrella, like they keep, like they don't even get close to the line. They like, they see the line and they think about going over to it, but they don't. And I'm
and
just like,
they still label it MA.
And they still label it MA. Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, like I really was surprised. Like I mean, after watching one episode of Invincible, which I still haven't gone back to Invincible, Daredevil, but I was kind of like, okay, this might be like Invincible, or like at least, you know, definitely bloody, maybe like like Deadpool or John Wick or something. Like I was expecting that kind of level stuff, you know, and not to get that, I was kind of like, okay, well, this was like tame. Not that I'm gonna let like little kids watch it, but I'm definitely like, I would sit down and let my, you know, 15-year-old niece watch it with me, kind of thing, like,
yeah,
if she wanted to. But yeah, it was just kind of like, that is, and after watching Daredevil, I'm like, yeah, they definitely like toned it down. They had a leashed Kingpin in Echo.
Yeah, yeah, I almost feel like maybe what the MCU could do is pause the massive superhero storylines. And let's focus on the street level. And then after we get, you know, bogged down on street level, we can go back to the superhero level.
Yeah, because, well, we only have Deadpool coming out this year. So maybe that's kind of what we're getting.
Yeah, we need a break.
What was their last MCU movie?
The Marvels, I think.
Yeah.
Well, actually, the Marvels. Yeah.
Okay, I was sitting there, I was like, did I go see that? And yes, I did go see that.
Yeah, Marvels, The Eternals.
Oh, I tried watching The Eternals, and yeah. I was just like, and I like Gemma Chan too. Like, it had some actors and actresses I liked, and I was just like, I couldn't even watch it. I actually, like, turned it on to do some grading in the back, like, while I graded or something. I don't know. I didn't even pay. I looked up, and I was like, I have no idea what's going on, and I turned it off.
The Eternals, for me, was like watching a train wreck, where they make all the wrong decisions all the way, and you can't turn away, because it's a train wreck.
Yeah. So, when it comes to Echo...
Yes, to Echo.
I actually feel... even though Echo wasn't perfect, I actually feel like Echo is the best thing that the MCU's put out in a little while.
I agree.
Mostly because they didn't follow all the same tropes they've been following for the last, you know, I don't know, 15
years. They didn't blame capitalism for problems.
And I really enjoyed having a small break. As bad as this is going to sound, I really enjoyed having a small break from the MCU. In my MCU,
yeah.
And now that you're going back to Daredevil, Jekka, you're going to be getting a longer break. So
I know, yeah. And the other thing I really liked about Echo too, and I don't have a lot of personal experience with the deaf community, but I like one of my brothers, who I think he listens to our podcast, Kevin. Anyways, he was slow to start speaking. And so to kind of encourage him and help him, we started like kind of learning sign language, and he started using sign language to communicate with us. So it wasn't like full on, we weren't fluent in it at all, but we like little snippets and phrases and all that. So it's like that's kind of the closest most I've ever had with the deaf community is just that, trying some ASL out, you know? And I just really liked how they just their portrayal of it. Like I the thing I'm going with this is another TV show I really like is called Only Murders in the Building.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That TV show, it's on Hulu. That has a character in it who's deaf. And there's my favorite episode in the entire series is from the main, that deaf character's perspective. And there's no dialogue at all. It's all sign language or it's muted. Anytime you do get like normal hearing kind of stuff, it's just people, it's like music and people chuckling, but there's no dialogue until like the very last 2 minutes. And I love it. And that's what I really liked about Echo is like we were getting that like perspective. Like when it was from her perspective, is like we can't hear anything, we could see movements, we could see her standing there looking around, kind of checking her surroundings. And I just really liked that. And all of her interactions with like her family. I really liked all of that. I thought so. I think that's what I really enjoyed about it too.
I liked recognizing signs that I knew.
Yes, there were some signs I recognized too. Yeah, I was like, ooh, yeah.
Yeah, the way they did Kingpin Fisk was well.
I will say what I loved is everybody that was related to her biologically, like her family, all put in the effort to learn sign language for her.
Yeah, and I want to say
I loved the contrast of how Fisk never learned sign language.
Which, so watching Daredevil, where he comes out and reveals that he can speak like Chinese and Japanese and Russian, like that to me, I was like, oh, that's even more significant that he didn't try to learn ASL when he knows all these other languages, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked that too, how he was like, I made this device where when I talk, you could sign and I have a translator that will translate for me. And I love that because it made it even more like he didn't even try to learn ASL. And with that too, I want to add like me going down a rabbit hole with Echo. I've seen like a couple snippets of videos where the cast members and a lot of the crew actually learned ASL so they could like communicate with the actress because she is deaf. And so a lot of them learned sign language so they could actually communicate with her, which I thought was super cool.
Indeed. All right, let's start wrapping up. Any final thoughts on Echo or Daredevil, Jekka?
I'll save the Daredevil for the next Nerdy With Me. But like I highly recommend Echo. If you've seen Daredevil, I guess Amanda, you'll probably can expect a perspective like from Amanda. But if you haven't seen Daredevil, you'll probably end up watching it as a result of this. So I'm excited to go back and rewatch Echo when I finish Daredevil just to like kind of
that'd be kinda cool.
Enjoy it from that perspective.
Amanda, any final thoughts?
My final thoughts was about the ASL, so.
Okay, all right. All right, folks. Thanks so much for joining us on another adventure of Super Nerd Podcast. Make sure to hit that podcast subscribe button and leave us a review wherever you're listening to us. Subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, wherever else you find us. Next week, we are... I gotta bring up the calendar. Next week, we're doing a Dune Part 1 rewatch in preparation for Dune Part 2 coming out in March. It's crazy to think it's around the corner. So, if you have any thoughts on Dune Part 1, you can leave us a voicemail at anchor.fm/supernerdpodcast. You can also email us at supernerdpodcast@gmail.com or reach out to us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, supernerdpodcast. Give us a like, give us a share, and tell a friend about the podcast. But from all of us at Super Nerd Podcast, stay nerdy, my friends!
Catch you later!